Well, welcome to Grow Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and you join me again in my ain garden, ready for another danner round the paths. And I love this time of year. It's the start of autumn, not quite autumn, but when the leaves are just thinking about turning colour. And it's the time of hairst and enjoying the produce for the garden. And now the apples, I'm looking across the garden, the apples in the corner over there, they've been enjoying the heat through the big 12-foot wall that surrounds this garden. And they're looking bonny reed. And they're ready for picking, I think. The varieties are Katie, John Downey and Discovery. I used to hear Golden Spires and I loved that as a cooker, but I lost that tree near that long ago. Near a lot of plums this year again, though. And the foliage and the climbers and shrubs is beginning to put on their autumn cloaks as well. My favourite is growing up the birk tree. It's a climber card, a glory vine. And by the end of this month, the leaves, like great big plates, will be glorious, displaying all their autumn colours as they climb up the tree and over the big wall. It's just fabulous. Right, I've reached the greenhouse, so we'll hear another wee danner in here to see what things are looking like. Open the door. Big door. There we go now. All right. Things are moving in here as well. The tomatoes are just about finished. Another 12 weeks maybe, and fit a crop there has been. No, I have oft said, dinna boast oor quick about the good crops. There's been a moose deen enough a liking to the carrots in here. So they're hain to be lifted and frozen, nae the mice, the carrots, afore their moosey parties, and they dinna socially distance. But everything's looking fine in here. There's a good crop of cucumbers we had this year. Some fresh salad leaves just coming on, just to bring us into the autumn. I would say we've had a good year, apart from the moose hen parties in the carrot patch. So, time to join the team and come with me out to the greenhouse again, doing the path and into the virtual sheds. Welcome to Grow Radio. Welcome to our virtual sheds. The team is, as usual, rooted and ready to help you enjoy your garden. In this episode, we're in the hearst, reaping the fruits of our labours in the garden. Well, some of us are reaping the rewards, but for them, there's nae. There's aye next year, and that's far we come in. We can help you. We can encourage you. And just when we think we've got everything right, the weather changes. But in this programme, it's for them that has just started, them that experienced, and even them that didn't even hear garden, just enjoy the company. And as you're here, this is turning into a musical garden, this episode. Nothing wrong with that. And let me introduce the company. I'm still Frieda Morrison, with Sue and Sorter, guiding us through the waves in his studio in Edinburgh. Richie Werner.
Aye, aye, folks. Good to be back. How are we doing, Frieda?
Aye, good to hear from you. In this virtual shed in Aberdeen, we're programme manager, looking after our technical bits for this programme. Welcome, Andrew Davidson.
Hiya, Frieda, how you doing?
Oh, fine, Andrew, fine. And our Heid Gairdner, a past curator of the Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh and chair of the Open Garden Scheme, come in, David Mitchell.
Hello there, Frieda, felt like the day.
Oh, we're fine. And in this programme, as well as answering your gardening questions, we introduce you to our next guest cook, Claire Patterson, from Conaglen House in Strontian. Claire, are you there?
Hello, Frieda, I'm here.
Oh, it's good to hear. Isn't this magic? We can beam into you. I walk across near, you're near Fort William, aren't you?
We are. Just West Lochaber, so just over the water from Fort William.
Wow, body part of the country. Now, Claire will be guiding us through the dishes she's preparing at this time of the year and keeping with produce for the garden. And Dave will be joining in with his gardening tips for the kitchen and memoirs. He's also going to guide us through a choice of foliage plant, colour and form. Bonnie. So let's get on with. First question comes from Brian O'Hara in Inverness about tomatoes, or the lack of them. Brian.
Hello, Frieda and friends. This is Brian O'Hara in Inverness. And I've a question for you regarding my tomato plants, which I've been growing for the first time. And they've grown very tall, and I've used two small greenhouses, which I bought, plastic ones. They've grown tall, lots of leaves, but almost no tomatoes. So I've tried to water them as much as I thought they needed, but maybe I've packed them in too tightly. Maybe I should have cut them back. Maybe I should have given them more feed. Maybe I've watered them too much. I'm just not really sure. So I've sent a few photographs, and it would be good to hear from you. Sorry, I don't have such great Scots, but I'm learning bit by bit. So many thanks, and cheery the new.
Thanks, Brian, for that. And your Scots is fine, better than my Gaelic. And as I've said before, there's only a one to learn, that's by doing it. Just like singing, Brian and family are renowned Gaelic singers. Right, Dave, what would you suggest there if it's happened?
Ah, tomatoes. It says it all. Again, looking at the photos, they're a wee bit straggly. The tops are healthy, mine, but they're scorched in places with withered leaves at the base of them. Tomatoes are fickle. They're greedy fellas. They need to have a lot of regular watering and feeding and good humidity to thrive and fruit well. I think these fellas have probably dried out more than they should on some occasion, especially the yins in the pots. The yins in the grow bags look a wee bit better. The lack of fruit, well, when I was a young girner, you had to keep the tomato hoose nice and humid. They like a lot of humidity to get the fruit to set. But Brian shouldn't be disappointed, you can. Girning's about learning. He should have another go next year with the grow bags again. But the plants he's putting in the pots, I'd maybe put them in bigger pots. And Aubrey, just mind when you've got your tomatoes in warm weather, you need to water them at least twice a day. You need to check them twice a day, definitely.
What about feed, David?
Well, you ken how fickle they are, Frida. You know, they're greedy. I mean, you should never feed tomatoes when they're dry. And I used to feed them with liquid seaweed or Tommy Wright or any of the high phosphorus fertilisers, liquid fertilisers. And, you know, I would feed them every third day when they were going well. Get them going. Give them plenty of grub, plenty of water, and they'll get away.
I would just suggest you defit Andrew's dad to his tomato plants. Andrew, tell us again, just in brief terms, what your dad did to you when you were young.
Well, I grew a tomato plant that didn't have any tomatoes on it, so it was more just like a bush kind of thing. And stitched on cherry tomatoes overnight and kind of tricked me into thinking I'd grown tomatoes. Sounds a bit like a plotline for the Bruins or Roar Willie or something, but... They tasted good, better than growing them, maybe.
Oh, I love that story. Oh, anyway, we're half a story for you, Andrew. You see, he was damaged when he was a loon, for Gerdon. But we are in the midst of the Gerdon Hirst, reaping the fruits of our labours. Let me introduce again our guest cook this episode. Welcome, Claire Patterson. Again, Claire, give a brief description of where you are and what your job consists of.
Oh, well, Frida, we're on an estate over here in Lochaber, and basically we're just cooking for the people that come and live here. So it's a wee bit like, I don't know, going back 100 years or something, there's sort of a gardener who cooks, who produces the produce, and then it comes to the kitchen and we do what we can with it and try and keep everyone happy. So.
So, but they're paying guests, they come in about 15 to 20 guests at a time, you were telling me?
They come in 15 to 20 guests at a time. This time of year, they're here for stocking. So they're off on the hill, working up an appetite. At the start of the year, they're just here for walking and holidays and all that kind of thing.
Great. So do you work with the Gerda planning the menu?
We do. So we tend to work at the start of the year when she's doing her plan, and we talk about what's best to go in and what we'll use and what maybe we didn't use as much of as we'd have liked to the year before. And then she sort of does her best to keep us topped up with plenty of nice veggies and fruit and fruit cage and all sorts.
Great. We're going into that in more detail in a minute. But we're going to take you for one of your suggested dishes just now. Here's the first thing, the beetroot dish.
Beetroot. So I love beetroot, and this is a really fun way to present it. So salt-baked beetroot. You get your beetroot, maybe a tennis ball-sized one, and you make up a kind of wet sand kind of consistency from egg white and salt, just plain table salt. And then you pack that around your beetroot, an hour in the oven, and then you sort of crack them open, peel off the skins, and you've got this very, very intense, it's well seasoned, but it's not too salty, and it kind of dehydrates the beetroot a wee bit, so it kind of gets very, very intense, and it's absolutely delicious. Sort of in a salad, we serve it in a salad with a bit of venison from the steak and a horseradish sort of creme fraiche. It's absolutely delicious.
That sounds really scrumptious. What kind of temperature's the oven at?
Oh, probably sort of medium, so maybe about 150 degrees. Takes about an hour for a tennis ball sized one, more for bigger ones, less for weir ones. And you can sort of prod them with a wee skewer, get through the crust just to check they're tender right into the middle. But they're great. They look like big snowballs. Great fun.
I love the idea of that. I love it. Right. Claire, stay with us and I'll beam back to you in a minute. Okay. Right, back to questions. Next is an audio question again that comes from another musician, Charlie Abel from Aberdeen. Fruit trees, Charlie.
Hi there. This is Charlie in Aberdeen. About 3-4 years ago, I planted some fruit trees in my garden, two apple trees and a pear tree. And I got apples the first year off my apples, and I haven't had any apples since, but the trees look healthy enough. But the pear tree is a peely-wally crater. There's not much happening with it. It's spindly. The leaves look anemic, and I'm not right sure if it's a dee with it. My neighbour has seen that, and it did. I'm wondering if it's the climate. It's a conference pear tree. Maybe the climate's not good enough for it here in Aberdeen. I'm at Red Moss, so I get a bit of the cold wind off the sea here. If you have any words of advice, that would be fantastic. Cheers. Bye.
David?
Well, you can read it. The further north you go, the more shelter you need, especially in the northeast. Pears do far better against a wall. Definitely run about your air and run about Aberdeen. And if space is short, you're better growing them as cordons rather than as fans and espaliers. Pears are sun lovers. They shouldn't be in a place where they get shade for any more than about quarter of the day. And you need to keep them out of the prevailing wind. They don't like being chilled. And if you are growing them in a kind of orchard style as a standard tree, you want to avoid planting them at the bottom of the slope where they get the cold air fleeing over the top of them. Conference for Scotland is a good, reliable choice in most areas. There's other varieties that are worth thinking about, like Invincible, which is self-fertilising. It's got a good characteristic in that it produces 2 or 3 flushes of flowers at a time. So if you get a wee bit of late frost, you've still got a chance of getting fruit. Concord has a grand sweet taste, and it's good. Ayrshire Lass is a good, tough, hardy tree. But I sometimes think it can be a wee bit gritty. But it's clear, okay, and these kind of pears spice well. Oh, they're lovely and grand with a bit of cold meat. And there's an area called Pitmaston Duchess, which has grand flavour. I really like it, but you need to plant it in a group. So I think, Jelly, I'd be hyking them out and having another go with pears again a war in a sunny spot.
Right, Dave. Thank you for that. And Shirley, of course, is a fine accordion player in the Kayleigh band Iron Brew. As I said, it's a musical episode, this thing. Right, Dave, in keeping with the season, and we have Claire with us, we have vast knowledge and experience of cooking the big hoose. A lot of the gardeners of yore had to use a lot of ingenuity to supply the cook in the kitchen. And any of your favourites, guiders, are you like, I can, is Walter Nicol. Tell us about him.
Walter Nicol was an awful clever man. He was a gardener at Weems Castle in Fife, and he wrote an awful good book called The Scotch Forcing and Kitchen Gardener. And it really describes how to beat the climate. And it's all the exotic things that Claire's guests would like. He talks about growing asparagus and grapes and nectarines and cucumbers and melons and peaches and cherries and mushrooms. And he also talks about managing the greenhouse and orchard fruits and the kitchen garden. And he talks about growing asparagus and how to be successful with it. He goes on a wee bit about how fussy shallots can be and the fact that they need rich, dry loam. And he talks about sowing peas and double drills and why onions, you really need to feed the ground to get them to grow well with lots of manure. And starting his onions early in the year. He talks about starting them in January, and my father did that when he did them for seed. Because you get onion sets, well, I'm not sure just when onion sets arrived, but it certainly wasn't until after about 1910, 1920, I would have thought. You know, but all the stuff that he's got, though in book, you can carrots, beans, parsnips, potatoes, kale. There's even a kind of calendar a wee bit in the back of it about how it links in with the kitchen. Gardeners like that could supply the kitchen all year round, because if they didn't, cook wasn't happy. And whatever way you look at it, cook's the boss.
Claire, I'll tell
cook's,
you that. Claire,
cook's the boss. Knees gainer, too much of the in thing at the wrong time, and know enough of what she wants when it's no when it's no ready, or you'll just get a swearing.
You're the boss, eh, Claire?
And that's it. And it's interesting. I'm actually where I'm sitting, I'm looking out the window, and there's a peach wall just sits above me here. And all the old heated beds. So I know exactly what you're talking about. They're not in use at the moment, but they were at one point. So it's nice to see.
Nice to get them going again. I wouldn't just imagine that you do a lot of swearing, perhaps. Not that Mr. Mitchell was suggesting you did. But it's good to hear that the system is still going on. Now, there's a lot of audio questions in this episode. Before I go on back to that, I should ask about, can folk get hold of the book, David?
It's kind of scarce, but actually there's if you look online and you search for it under its name and put the letters PDF after it, you can actually access it free as a PDF to read it online.
Wow. Right, back to the questions again. Thank you for that, David and Claire. But as I said, there's a lot of audio questions in this episode. Your system, Andrew's catching on.
Right.
Before we hear for the next question, geez, the format again, Andrew. Fit folk have to dee with the button on the Grow Radio webpage to record the questions. Andrew.
It's really straightforward, as we said before. There's nae scutter involved, and I like nae scutter. So all you have to do is you go on to Grow Radio, so it's growradio.com, and when you go on there, there's a button, and it's pretty obvious. It says, click here to record your question. You just hit that button, you speak a wah, and then at the end, it just sends it directly to us. It's that easy. So just go on there, speak a wah, send it to us, and we'll get your questions answered for you.
It'd be a great mantra or a kind of identity thing called Nae scuttering, speak a wah. Nae scuttering, speak a wah. Right.
Can we have that as a logo?
Aye, I was thinking as a logo. Nae scuttering, speak a wah. No, this is a good idea to flag up on New Scots Radio Programme episode 71, and it's about the heritage of Scottish food. We're wrecking the gunnels of Scotland's larder, and in this Scots Radio programme, we're beaming in on the book card, The Scots Kitchen, Traditions and Customs, will be F. Marion McNeil. And we have a lineup of food enthusiasts, writers and willing consumers in this programme. So that's on www.scotsradio.com, www.scotsradio.com. And you know the participants were singer, musician, folklorist Steve Byrne, Trenent, another singer. Stephen mentioned his tomatoes, so this is his recorded question. Steve.
Hi, Dave and Frieda. I hear a question about tomatoes. Now, we've had trouble getting ahead of tomato plants the last 2 or 3 years. It's not been that easy come May, June time to get ahead of them for some reason. So we decided this year we would grow some for seed, and it's a variety. We've had a four that have been aphagid on our South Fesenois in East Lothian, a variety for Germany called Hartsfeuer. Trouble is, with the weather in August being that rough, we didn't have a greenhouse. We haven't had much in the way of ripening. Well, there's plenty of fruit on the vines, but I just wondered if you had any advice as to what we might do now that we're into September, and hopefully manage to get them to ripen before it gets ever cold.
Dave, any hope?
Well, you can see that there's a wee trick to ken if you've got any chance of your tomatoes ripening or no. Yep. As long as the fruits are full-sized, you can cut them in half, just pick in and cut it in half. And if there's a kind of jelly-like substance round about the seed, then you have a chance of getting them right. If that jelly-like substance is near there, you might as well go out of the cookbook and look up recipes for green tomatoes. Now, you should never put green tomatoes in the fridge, because you'll not ripen them in the fridge. Basically, if tomatoes are stored below 10 degrees centigrade, They shut down all the chemical reactions that give them their flavour and their colour. You need to mind that to get them to ripening, ethylene's your friend. And all fruits produce ethylene to help them ripen. It's a gaseous plant hormone.
Spell that word, ethylene.
E-T-H-Y-L-E-N-E.
Ethylene.
Now, I'm not suggesting you go away out and get gas or something. All you need is a cardboard boxy. All you need is a cardboard box or an old drawer. Right. And what you do is you put a ripe banana in it.
Or a banana?
Or a ripe apple.
Bananas.
Oh, is an apple working on?
And you put the tomatoes in there and you shut the box and you put a clutie or an old sack over the old drawer. Some folk, if you didn't have that money, they put them in a paper poke. Nae a plastic in. That's nae good, a paper poke. And whatever way you do, just look at them regularly. And if there's yin or twa that are gone mouldy or no looking right, throw them out. And that way they usually ripen within a couple of weeks. But whatever you're doing, don't stack them yin on top of the other either. They don't like that, because if you do, they'll just go into mush. So I think the best road's just to hear wheen big paper pokes and put them in a paper poke with a kind of ripe apple or a ripe banana and get it a go. But, you know, I'd get the cookery book out. I know, I bet Claire's got good ideas for green tomatoes.
Well, we're just about to get there as well, but my cousin Helen, who was cooking the Last Girl radio programme, had an alternative for green tomato chutney. Tune into that programme. But if you have red tomatoes, Claire, or guest cook, has an idea. Claire, give your suggestions for tomatoes.
Aye, so our tomatoes are coming to the end, and what we've got left, they're kind of getting a wee bit mushy, a wee bit overripe. And this is just a couple of ways to get them used up and extend the time you can use them as well. So the first one is to make a butter out of them. So you grill or roast your tomatoes just for maybe 10 minutes till the skin's split with a wee bit of salt. Leave them to cool. Then whack them in a mixer, like a food processor, with some soft butter. It'll look like it's curdling, but just keep spinning it and it'll all come back together. And then you've got this beautiful, the flavour of the tomatoes in the butter. And that is delicious on pasta, on chicken or fish. And it'll keep in the fridge for about a week. You can pop it into a log and stick it in your freezer and then just slice it off as you need it. And that's a really good way to use them up.
Fabulous. Look, back a wee bit of there, Finn. Do you take off the skins?
No, skins and everything. Everything just goes in,
boys.
Honestly.
Thank you, boys. Wow.
10 minutes work, not even. And that's you. You've got months of that lovely ripe tomato flavour.
Okay. I have to tell you about my attempt at oven-dried tomatoes. Abdel seems to be able to do it. Mine turned out little black, crusted blobs in the oven.
Your oven's too high.
Oh.
Turn it down.
Well, I tried it low and nothing was happening, so I turned it up.
You can. I love tomatoes, and sometimes you can. I bet Claire agrees. Sometimes the simplest things are the best. If you just get your tomatoes and leave them sitting on the windowsill in the sun, 3-4 hours in the sun, and they get nice and warm. You shouldn't eat them straight out of the fridge. They've no flavour.
No. And then don't put them near the fridge.
Oven-dried tomatoes, Claire. How do we do it?
Okay, so you get a nice low oven and you get your tomatoes, bigger ones, quarter them, take out the seeds, little bit of olive oil, little sprinkle of salt, little tiny sprinkle of sugar, and if you've got some fresh thyme, a wee bit of that's lovely as well. And then
thyme.
And then into your low oven and a bit of patience. So it'll take a couple hours. They'll slowly just start to shrink a wee bit. They'll darken slightly, no to black, just a wee bit darker. And then leave them to cool, and you can pop them in the fridge covered with oil if you want to keep them.
Oh, lovely. The mistake I must have made is leaving the seeds in then. Apart from turning up the oven.
Yeah, I mean, it's more, it shouldn't, I mean, you can do it with the seeds in, but it's just more the texture afterwards, you know. The seeds didn't make them black.
I'll try again, Claire. But I am renowned for disasters in the kitchen. Right, another recorded question again. This is for Lorna Davidson from Fraserburgh about begonia tubers. Lorna.
Hi, this is Lorna from the Broch. Last autumn, we decided to save the begonia tubers from the town planters. I dried them and kept them in cardboard boxes in the garage. I didn't bring them into the house until they started to sprout in March, and then I potted them up in April. Is this the correct method? By the way, we're pleased to plant out 170 begonias in the town planters in July.
Wow.
Thanks for your help.
Wow. Before we go on, Andrew, do you kind of learn as a singer or no? No?
No, not at
all. Okay then. Right, moving on. That's a lot
why
of
why
were
you asking?
Well, Abdias has been singers, you see, this program.
I thought the tuba was the musical element of it.
Oh.
No.
Moving on quickly. Right, David.
Well, you can, I just feel like it when you can say that a buddy's doing the right thing. You know, she's doing everything that's right. You know, lifting them, keeping them frost-free, getting them started early in the heat, and getting them established, growing them on, putting them outside. You know, she's doing the right thing. She's not doing anything wrong at all. Good luck and mere power to your elbow.
Mere power. Town planters, team planters. That's excellent work, Lorna. Congratulations. Now then, Dave, thinking about the role of the gairdner and the link with the kitchen and the garden, as we said, quote for the 17th century Scottish gairdner John Reid, the gairdner's year is a circle, as is his labour, never at an end. Thick, can you tell us about John Reid and lessons of the past?
Well, you can. John Reid, he was an awful kind of fella, as you can see for that quote. But he did more than grow his garden. He grew his cell, and that's an important thing. I see that in a lot of gardeners in history. He can, by the age of 39, he'd left Scotland, and he was Surveyor General in New Jersey in the United States. He had 3,700 acres of ground in a big place called Hortensia. But he never lost his roots as an apprentice gairdner for his time in Nidri Castle, just outside Edinburgh. And there's a wonderful quote in his book, The Scotch Gairdner, where he says, "The kitchen garden is the best of all gardens. But with hedge, shrubs and wall trees, borders and walks, clean and orderly kept, it will look like a garden of pleasure." And he was canny and all, because he often said gardening for profit and gardening for pleasure should go on together. And when you look at his book, and it's just an amazing, you can buy second-hand copies online, reprints, you can read it for nothing online and all. It talks about growing cucumbers in hotbeds, the importance of fallowing ground. He even talks about making cider and perry and sowing peas and with the cycle of the moon. He talks about the use of wall for growing tender fruits like apricots. He even creates wee tapestries of vegetables in his garden for getting all the wee fine leaves. You can, they fancy cooks think they're doing something different now. They were doing that 200-300 years ago. He talks about things that I've done myself in my lifetime, like forcing rhubarb and forcing chicory and endives, growing salsify and scorzonera, and exotic things like grapes and peaches and catch crops on celery. And he just gets right back to basics and talks about fit do you need, fend do you want it, and will it day for me? Is it the right variety? Does it suit my soil, my weather? He doesn't waste his time with fussy craters. Time's too valuable. He talks about crop rotation. He discusses getting the balance right so that things are produced in rhythm with the kitchen throughout the season, so that you're not clogging the kitchen up with too much of the wrong thing at the wrong time. It was interesting to hear Claire saying there earlier that she sits down with the gardener when he's about to order the seeds and discuss what do they want, when do they want it, and getting the right thing, you know, in the right way. And F1 hybrids, I've said this before, they're grand, they're handy, but they're not the right thing because they all come at you. So, you know, it's just
that's a big problem.
It's just getting all thing right, you know. Really, as I look at it, overall, the garden and the kitchen, you've got to plan well ahead. Andrew would like this. Dinna footer, dinna scutter about, get the right thing. Experiment a bit with new things, but keep your old favourites that they will be year in, year out. Gearman's about having fun today. Don't be ever serious about it.
David, just so I can come in there, you can still get hold of that book, John Reed's book. Then.
Oh, aye. I mean, if you get on to any of the online shopping slots, you'll find copies of it. In fact, it was republished.
It's a card.
It's called The Scots Gairdner,
right.
Published for the Climate of Scotland by John Reed. And there was a version published and written by Annette Hope with an introduction at the beginning of it. And there's still a lot of it around. It was done in about 1988, I think. But I would highly recommend it, just as an interesting winter read. And what I love about it is it gets back to basics and it teaches you that getting that relationship between the kitchen and the garden correct is very important, because if the cook's happy, everybody's happy.
Right. Now, can I remind you that we have a new programme out on Scots Radio, and today, with Food and Its Heritage, we're focusing on the book by food writer F. Marion McNeil, 1885 to 1973. It's a book called The Scots Kitchen, and is regarded by many as the best. And in this programme, we feature Gaelic singer Kathleen McInnes. Yep, another singer, boys. Telling us about the food she delights in remembering growing up in South Uist. You'll hear me in a minty. And here, listen to episode 71, Scots Radio, on www.scotsradio.com. Right, Andrew, remind us about nae footering about, scuttering about, to get in touch with us here at Grow Radio for DVD.
Right, so if you're anyone to scutter, all you have to do is go on to www.growradio.com. Push a button, speak a wah, record your question, it gets sent to us. If you want to write it down, though, you can send us an email, and the email is info@growradio.com.
Yeah, we're fairly marsupial in our kind of skills and music in that regard. Right, Dave, I'm making you work hard in this episode. I'm not sorry. Oh, I'm not sorry.
I'm used to it. I'm like the mice. I give you a hard time.
You and I were discussing the importance of plants for foliage and colour, and we realised that this is a very big subject. So can I ask you to guide us in our planting plans? Plants for Foliage, episode one. We'll do the next stage, next episode. But this is the first part.
Aye, well, it is. You can't... Gearden's nae all about flowers. We all get hung up about flowers. They're the bonus ball. It's the foliage that's the thing that's there for the greatest part of the year. And as you say, it's a big topic. And I think next time we'll look more about colour in the winter garden and stuff like that. And we might even hear a wee look at what you can cut and bring into the house to decorate it for the festive season. But for now, what good are foliage plants? What do they do for you? I mean, you think about it, they give you an architectural foil. They can often provide a focal point. They can provide screening. They can provide shelter. Another queer thing, foliage plants are often important for creating a sound barrier. They're really the skeleton, the structure of the garden. And as the plants mature, they can give a garden a sense of grandeur, a sense of establishment. They provide that interest all year round. They give a sense of permanence to the landscape.
Right, give us a few ideas, Dave, of what you would recommend to put in.
Well, you've got to think about texture. Plants that look hard, plants that look soft, things that are shiny. Hard plants maybe would be things like phormiums. Soft plants would look like ferns. Shiny plants would be things like grisolinia or hebes. Or you might have woolly-looking plants like the woolly willow, Salix lanata, with its lovely silver foliage. Or you might have plants that are kind of almost finger-like, like rushes or reeds or some of the grasses that stick up. And then you need to think about the shapes of the leaves, whether they're round leaves or linear leaves or pointed leaves or feathery tight leaves. You also need to think about the shape of the plant itself. Is it a columnar plant? Is it layered? Is it horizontal? Is it weeping? And it's mixing all these textures and shapes and forms together that you start to create that all year round interest.
Can we start with ground cover, just specifics?
If you want some ground cover plants, things like Cotone aster would be useful, or Juniperus horizontalis, Hebe pinguifolia pagii, or maybe, well, I quite like that, Pachysandra terminalis, or other ground covers would be things like Burgonia cordifolia. It's fine and handy for that. You know, just think about using the plant as a tool. That's the important bit. And think about the colour. Is it light? Is it dark? And watch variegated things. Oh, you get clean variegation and dirty variegation. You've got to watch. It's all about contrast and harmony. But, you know, I love things like silver foliage. Some of the eucalyptus are wonderful. But, I mean, coming up to Christmas, you would maybe want to have couple of big hollies in your garden. You might want ivies as well, but exotics like Fatsia japonica or palms like Trachycarpus fortunii. The list's endless of what you can use, but it's thinking about the role of foliage and not just rushing out and going, what kind of flowers has it got? Step back and say, what is its shape? What's its form, its colour, its texture? How can I paint a living landscape with that?
Before we finish that, give you a couple of berries so that we can plant some berried plants.
Oh, well, Cotone aster damari, I think, is nice. Any of the Cotone asters are good for berries. There's a lot of them. I know so much berries, but fruits, I love things like the crab apples, you know, for the bigger garden. There's nothing looks better than Hypophia rhamnoides, the sea buckthorn with own bright orange fruits on it, the silver foliage, but you need a bigger garden for that. And you can, those fruits are one of the highest fruits with a concentration of vitamin C of anything living on the planet. And they make jelly out of it, I know. It's dandy stuff.
Aye. I know that. It's lovely. Dave, thanks. As I said, episode two, more names and details in the next episode. Now, before we get off the subject of our new Scots radio programme, episode 71, and the heritage of food, there we were speaking about the heritage of food and F. Marion McNeil's book. Asked Abdi about their favourite dishes. Andrew had the best in. What was your favourite dish, Andrew?
Why is it a fish supper? It's because I lived overseas for a while in a landlocked country that didn't have any haddock, so that's all that I wanted to eat.
Nothing wrong with that. Next, Ben Spear. We'll give you fish suppers whenever you want. No, I've kept this bit to last because Claire Patterson, our cook, is just about to tell us about a final suggested seasonal dish. But can I go back to Kathleen McInnes? As I said, she was in our episode 71 Scots Radio edition. And Kathleen, of course, is a renowned Gaelic singer on that programme. Kathleen was speaking about the food she remembers growing up wee in South Uist and her mum's cooking. And you can hear Kathleen singing on that programme as well, as Steve Byrne singing as well. This is turning into a musical garden show. Nothing wrong with that, eh, lads?
Nah.
Nothing wrong
with that? No.
But in her confabs after the programme, Kathleen mentioned that she needed some suggestions for plants around her mum's house in South Uist. Different conditions, obviously, for the East Coast. So Kathleen wants the ideas about climbers around the Waas and another hydrangea at the door. David?
Well, I had a bit of a think about this, especially when you mind the climate out west on the Atlantic seaboard, the kind of salt spray and strong winds and all that. It's an awful bonny air, mind. But most climbers you've got to think about and things for round the door, they're for sheltered woodland situations, so they don't like the blast that you get out in the west. So it's a tough question because where it's first, it's a guy open and exposed. I think hydrangeas really just macrophyllas, the yin that'll do best in the west. But climbers, things like Clematis alpina, Clematis montana, Tetra rose, the honeysuckle, again, just the Lanissa ripera clima, all day wheel, any forums of Rosa rugosa, Rosa spinosissima, the burnet rose, there's lots of them. There's a nice wee dwarf rose that I've seen called the fairy, which does well in kind of coastal situations. But out of the hydrangeas, I think really you're really just talking about macrophylla and all the different kind of forms of that there are. because it's not so much the wind that's the problem, it's the salt spray. There's a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. And another wee thought too is that there's a wee Chilean climber, Ecrimocarpus scaber, that can be growing for seed, and it scurries up and down. I think a combination of things would be good.
Right, thanks for that, Kathleen. And Abdi, just thoroughly enjoyed your piece on episode 71 Scots Radio, and your singing was sublime, sublime. Dave, you enjoyed it?
Oh, it was a grand programme, that. It really was.
Aye, lovely. No, I've kept this bit till last because Claire Patterson, our cook, is just about to tell us about her final suggested seasonal dish, started with runner beans. Claire.
That's it. Well, we've got a big lot of runner beans at the moment in Lochaber, so keep getting them handed to me. And this is a way to use them up. You can freeze them once you've cooked them like this, or you can eat them up. So it's some onion, some garlic, quite a lot of garlic, some whole cloves and some crushed, salt, wee bit of paprika, wee bit of cayenne if you like a wee bit of spice, and then in go the beans and some peeled tomatoes, a wee tiny bit of water, and you just braise them for about half an hour until they're really, really soft. And you can eat them hot, or you can leave them to sort of cool down and have them at room temperature as part of a kind of metzi, kind of Mediterranean meal. And they're really good. One for garlic lovers. Very, very garlicky.
Love that idea. And then, the final dish. Pear and bramble crumble, lads. Pear and bramble crumble.
Finishing a pudding. So I do this, I do my crumble like this in two parts because I don't like it going all mushy. So I cook the fruit in a mixture of sugar, wee bit of water, wee bit of white wine, couple of cardamom pods if you've got them until it's tender. That's the pears. Turn the heat off, add in the brambles, and then I make a crumble mixture, just like your normal home ec crumble mixture, and then add in a big handful of crushed up hazelnuts, and then I bake that on a tray in the oven, sort of about 170, 180, just till it's lightly golden, and then the fruit goes into your bowl, the crumble on top, so it stays really nice and crunchy and crispy, and then a big jug of custard or cream to serve alongside.
The silence coming through the loons, the lads.
I've gone to Nirvana.
Yeah, that sounds fine, eh?
I've gone to Nirvana.
Can I ask a question? How long do you cook the pears in the oven?
I just do them on the hob. So it depends on the pears, but I usually use ones, so you don't want them too soft when you cook them. You want, you know, a wee bit of a firmer pear is quite good.
Right.
And then maybe 10 minutes, maybe 20, just depends, until they're just tender, not mushy, but just tender. And don't put your brambles in until you've cooked your pears, otherwise you'll have a big purple soup.
Right, thank you. That's probably what I would have done, and I'd have a pan of purple soup. Okay. Thank you, Claire. Much appreciated. Hey, that was good. That was a fantastic idea. We'll get a go. See how we get on with that, Ian Ritchie. Right. Mm-hmm. On anybody, anything to add before we shut the sheddy door?
Well, I just want to say to all the gardeners out there, Frieda, that just mind your place. The garden's the big engine, and it can feed anybody. But it's the kitchen that's the machine, and the cook's the boss. So don't mess with her, or you'll no get your supper.
I was really excited to hear Dave's piece on foliage, actually, because my big save recently has been, I had a really bonny miniature acer, but I just about lost my acer, and pulled it out, potted it, fed it, and it's all coming back again with these beautiful sort of burgundy leaves, you know, that's gorgeous.
Oh,
so I'm glad.
I forgot, we haven't actually spoken about your bearings this episode.
Oh, names.
Any of them went to school.
I had them up a ladder picking crab apples yesterday, but I was heading on to them, so that was all right. They loved picking the apples, eh? So that was good crack.
Right. Right. And you're coping with the first time at school.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I'm actually kind of getting on with the main things again, so it's exciting. It's exciting for them, and exciting for me to kind of be an adult again, so...
Right, you're coping anyway. Okay. Andrew, you're okay? You're having a good time?
I think it's fine. Chavin' away. That's all you can do.
Just chavin' away. Okay, Dave, join us again and don't put off sending in your gardening questions or even telling us about your successes or failures or just how much a garden means to you. It's more than a garden, mind, sometimes. Andrew, how do folk get in touch again? Just one more time, because I furl through.
You can head over to growradio.com, push a button, speak a word, and that'll send your questions straight over to us. Or you can send us an email. So you can write down your question and send it to info@growradio.com.
That's it. And that's us. On behalf of Richie, Andrew, Dave, and Claire and myself, enjoy your garden. And bye now.